Thank you again, everyone, for joining us for today's Spotlight on Suicide Prevention Cyber Seminar. Today's session is Strengthening Suicide Prevention Efforts for Women Veterans Through the Veterans Crisis Line. I want to introduce today's presenter, Dr. Melissa Dichter. She's a core investigator with the VA HSR&D Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion at the Philadelphia VA Medical Center and an associate professor in the School of Social Work at Temple University. Dr. Dichter, can I turn things over to you?
Yes, thank you, Heidi, and thank you, everyone, for being here today. Thank you for CIDR and HSR&D for sponsoring today's session. I'm going to be talking about the background and some early findings from this study that was funded by VA HSR&D, and I want to start by saying that the design for this PowerPoint slide that I've selected here was intentional, not just because it's pretty and calming, but to me, it symbolizes these connections. And I think connections are so important for suicide prevention, especially for women. And this is something that we've been hearing over and over again. So I want to first acknowledge support from VA HSR&D, that's Health Services Research and Development, as well as the VA HSR&D Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion, VA Veterans Crisis Line, and Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention. The study team for this project, who I will show you in a few slides, and we also have a stakeholder advisory board for this study. All of that being said, I want to say that the views that I express here today do not necessarily represent those of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the U.S. government, or the Veterans Crisis Line. Some background for this topic that I wanted to introduce to you. So we know that the population of women U.S. military veterans has been growing in recent years, but women veterans are still very much a numerical minority among the veteran population, also among the population of women in the general population. Very small percentage are women. So this is often a population that is under-recognized, sometimes under-included in research studies. And we know from prior research that we see differences by gender in terms of suicide risk, both among veterans and non-veterans, and that some women veterans have unique suicide prevention needs. In particular, we've seen that things like social relationships and social factors, interpersonal violence, and other factors can increase suicide ideation and risk. And that's true both for women and for men veterans, but these risks are far more prominent among women, and I'll provide you with some more background about that. We know that for women, feelings of low self-worth really contribute to suicidal ideation and behaviors, and this is a common impact in particular of gender-based violence and gender discrimination that women veterans experience. And we have a little bit of earlier research, that talks about observations of gender differences in veterans' use of the Veterans Crisis Line. That work largely comes from interviews with and input from Veterans Crisis Line responders, but we know little about the women veterans themselves, the callers themselves. And we've seen in prior research that we've done focusing on women veterans some conversation about the relevance of the Veterans Crisis Line for upstream suicide prevention for this population, and I will share some of that with you as well. So I wanted to do a little bit more background about women veterans and intimate partner violence. So intimate partner violence, which is sometimes referred to as domestic violence, includes various forms of violence and aggression or abuse, including not just physical, but also sexual, psychological, emotional forms of violence from a current or former intimate partner. And in previous research, we've seen a high prevalence of lifetime intimate partner violence among women who've served in the military, and higher rates of lifetime IPV compared to women who haven't served in the military. Also, by the way, much higher than what we see among men veterans. We know that the military experience can also interact with and intersect with women veterans' experiences of IPV and help seeking around IPV. So we've done prior research specifically focusing on women veterans' experiences with intimate partner violence. And this is some of the background that led to the current study that I'll be talking about. So I wanted to share with you some excerpts from qualitative interviews that we have done with women veterans who've experienced intimate partner violence. And again, this is from prior research that serves as a background to the study that I will be presenting to you today. So what we saw in these earlier interviews with women veterans who had experienced intimate partner violence, women talked about the IPV-related psychological pain leading to often sort of a passive suicidal ideation. That is this idea that, like, I don't feel like living anymore. Okay, I'm not actively planning a suicide attempt or suicidal behavior, but as this other participant said at the bottom here, she said, I'm not trying to do anything, but I wouldn't be unhappy if a truck hit me today and it's over. And earlier up in that quote, she attributed that to this experience in her intimate relationship. So she said, the doctor asked her, are you talking about you want to kill yourself? And I'm like, yeah. The doctor is like, why? And I said, first of all, I'm married to a man that doesn't love me. So being married to someone that who doesn't love you isn't necessarily intimate partner violence. In this case, we were talking with women who were experiencing intimate partner violence. Another woman veteran who had experienced intimate partner violence talked about the importance of just having someone to talk to. So she said that a VA provider had told her that if she needed help to just give her a call, needed someone to talk to, you can always call me. And this woman veteran said, when I do be ready to say, I can't take it anymore, please help me, I need to get out of this house before I go crazy or hurt myself or whatever, they'll be there to help, and it's good, it's easy access. If I ever get to that point that I can't keep myself, well, I know that I can just call the VA. And someone else spoke really specifically to the benefit of a crisis hotline. This study was conducted a few years ago. The Veterans Crisis Line had already been in place, but this particular research participant, this is a direct quote from the interview, she said, there should be a crisis hotline. Catch them before, not the minute before, not when they have a gun to their head, not when they have all their pills lined up to overdose. Catch them before they go down that slopey slide. Maybe they don't have any friends because their husbands cut them off. So you see a lot of sort of references to a kind of passive suicidal ideation, psychological or emotional crisis, the importance of having that crisis line, having someone that you can talk to and really in that upstream way, and that this crisis might be fueled by being in a marriage where you're not getting love or respect, being cut off from friends because your husband cut you off can be a part of intimate partner violence where you're being isolated from friends and family. So all of that led to this current study where we were focusing specifically on the Veterans Crisis Line. And before I get into that, I want to provide a little bit more background about the Veterans Crisis Line for those of you who are unfamiliar. So the Veterans Crisis Line that we call the VCL was started in 2007 as the National Veterans Suicide Prevention Hotline. The Crisis Line includes a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year phone hotline, but there's also an online chat function that was started in 2009 and a text function that was started in 2011. In 2010, the crisis line was named the Veterans Crisis Line, and that was specifically to send the message that this is not just a suicide prevention hotline, but it is more broadly available to veterans and their caregivers and others, specifically around any kind of crisis that might be going on. The Veterans Crisis Line increased from a single call center to now having a third call center, so increasing capacity. And here are some recent numbers about the use of the Veterans Crisis Line currently. This is another graphic from VCL that is designed to show the crisis line process that you can call, text, or chat. We'll have a responder who will listen and provide you help and support, that you have an option to be anonymous. So you don't actually have to give your identifying information. You get to decide how much you want to share. And then there's this opportunity for resource connection too. It doesn't have to end at the Veterans Crisis Line contact, but the Veterans Crisis Line can also connect you to other services. And just a note that soon, later this month, I believe, there will be a new, easier access number to reach the Veterans Crisis Line. In addition to this existing 1-800 number, will also be the launch of the 988 three-digit number. So all of this background, identification of a growing need to address suicide prevention among women veterans, growing information about women veterans' experiences of gender-based discrimination and abuse and assault, and women veterans talking about the need to be able to have someone to talk to, the desire for a crisis line, the importance of sort of upstream suicide prevention, led to this current study. The title of the study is Strengthening Suicide Prevention Efforts for Women Veterans Through the Veterans Crisis Line, funded by VA Health Services Research and Development. There are several co-investigators for this study and other project staff. The overall study has three aims. We're 2 years into this three-year study now. And so I'm going to be presenting to you the findings from study aim one. And this is where we were looking at describing and comparing the call characteristics between men and women veteran VCL users. And here we looked at call record data from the VCL. Aim two, we're currently finalizing the analysis on. We're looking at the suicide self-directed violence outcomes associated with VCL call characteristics. And in aim three, we conducted qualitative interviews with women veterans who'd used the VCL in the past 12 months, and I'll be presenting to you some of the early findings from those interviews as well. We also then added two aims to expand the study to look specifically at the impacts of the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, and I'll share with you some of the findings from that as well. So our AIM-1 study cohort included all calls to the VCL in calendar years 2018 and 2019, excluding those that were identified as prank calls, including only those from veteran callers who were calling on their own behalf, calling for themselves, not calling out of concern for a third party. And because we wanted to specifically look at gender differences, we excluded all calls where the gender of the caller was not identified. And at this time, gender categories in the VCL data are limited to women and men, although labeled as female and male, which are terms more typically used to refer to sex rather than gender, but that's why we use that terminology here. So of these calls in calendar years 2018 and 2019, you can see the numbers at the bottom of this flow chart here, about 15% were by women veteran callers. And we pulled the data from the Veterans Crisis Line database, where information about each of the calls is recorded at the time of the call by the VCL responder. What we saw here is that the distribution of timing of call, that is time of day, is either day or evening, day of the week, and season of the year, was fairly similar by gender. Women were slightly more likely than men to call during the evening or night versus the day, and on a weekend versus a weekday, but we really didn't see large differences by gender here. We then looked at reason for call. VCL call responders have options of several categories. These are checkboxes, and they can check as many as they as is applicable for a particular call. And so we looked at the reason for call and compared by gender. And so these are the percentages of calls within each group that had these reasons for call listed. So most calls had more than one reason for call indicated. So for example, 70.1% of calls by women had more than one reason listed. And then mental health was the most common reason for call selected for both women and men, but you can see more frequently applied to calls by women. And so the bold numbers here are where we saw some significant differences in the percentages by gender. And also highlighting here, you can see that relationship problems is fairly common among calls by women. Also family problems, specifically parent-child, is where we saw a substantial gender difference. Military sexual trauma, we saw a pretty substantial difference here, 7.2% of calls by women and less than 1% of calls by men. Substance use and addiction was more common for calls by men. And then again, abuse and violence and non-MST sexual assault were more common among calls by women. This is the same information presented in a different way. So you can see graphically here the top 10 reasons for call by gender. The blue line shows the percentage of calls by women, and the green line shows the percentage of calls by men. So you can also see some of these gender differences here. VCL includes a three-item suicide risk screen that is to be asked of every VCL caller, regardless of reason for call. The three items are you currently thinking of suicide? Have you thought of suicide in the last 2 months? And have you ever attempted suicide? We then also calculated the composite, which is saying yes to any one of those three items. And what you see here is 52% of the calls by women said yes to at least one of those items, and that was compared to 40.7% of the calls by men. So on each of these items and the composite score, the proportion who said yes was higher among calls by women than among calls by men. We also looked at the call outcome in terms of referral, that is, where callers were referred to at the conclusion of the call. This is not a fully inclusive and exhaustive list, but what we wanted to highlight here is that one option is that callers, especially callers with suicidal ideation or particular risk, may be referred to a suicide prevention coordinator, an SPC, at a local VA facility that is local to the veteran caller. And what we saw here is that 29% of the calls by women resulted in a referral to the suicide prevention coordinator versus 27% of the calls by men. But the calls by men were more likely to have a warm transfer to another resource, 8.3% versus 5.7% here. And that may be another resource outside of the VA. We don't know necessarily from these data, but we think that that's because there are other services out in the community that are often specifically targeted to or populated by men veterans and that are less frequently used by women veterans. So then in our for our COVID-specific analysis, we added the VCL call data for the calendar year 2020, because what we wanted to see is this trend over time from 2018 to 2020 to see if there was maybe a big jump in calls at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, you know, really ramped up in the United States in about March of 2020. But in January of 2020 was when we really started hearing about this new virus that hadn't yet been named, but might have been starting to raise some concerns and mental distress among people in the United States. What you can see here is we did see an increase in 2020, but the increase, when we did analysis of this statistically, we really did not see a substantial change in slope associated with the onset of COVID-19, that is in 2020 from 2019. So the rate of increase from 2018 to 2019 was basically the same from 2019 to 2020. For men, it actually went down a little bit, that rate of increase, but not a whole lot. Then we also looked at for the years 2019 and 2020, this is the average number of calls per day by month and gender. So you can see here for 2020, for both women and men, the lowest volume of calls per day, average number of calls per day, was in April of 2020. And then it was highest for men in July of 2020, and highest for women in September of 2020. Not a big variation from 2019, but it may be helpful to look at the number of average number of calls per day by month to see what are the months when people may be experiencing more mental distress or maybe reaching out more for support around that. Also, starting in April of 2020, VCL added what we're calling a flag, sort of a checkbox in the database to allow the VCL responders to check off if the call was somehow related to COVID, if the caller was expressing some concern related to the COVID-19 pandemic. We see that for both women and men, about 4% of those calls had that COVID flag attached. And so what we want to do is see if these calls with this COVID flag, if they differed in some way from calls without the COVID flag, or what was the content of those calls. So when we look at those suicide screening questions, again, by COVID flag and by gender, we see that still women are more likely than men to have say yes to these suicide screening items. But what we're also seeing here consistently across gender is that the calls that were COVID related also were more likely to say yes to at least one of these screening questions. And actually, it's true for each of the three screening questions. When we looked at the themes in the COVID-related calls, so this analysis comes from the call synopsis data. So for each VCL contact in the database, the VCL responder writes a very brief narrative about the call. And so we analyzed a sample of those synopsis notes for the calls with the COVID flag to see what were the kinds of things that people were calling about. This isn't necessarily surprising information, but it's helpful to see the range of topics for COVID-related calls. So some of it had to do with material stressors, you know, having to close down a business, for example, financial concerns and constraints. We also saw health impacts and disrupted access to care, that the pain clinic is closed, for example, and not being able to access the needed shots, as well as impacts on coping resources and abilities for healthy coping. So recently started drinking again as a means for coping, increasingly lonesome, feeling depressed, and, you know, having their coping skills cut off. For example, people talked about, you know, not being able to go to the gym, that was an important coping skill for mental distress, and so reaching out to VCL instead for that reason. People also talked about COVID-related anxiety about the impacts of COVID, and other categories were related to information about COVID testing, COVID theories, politics, et cetera. This information has been accepted for publication in the journal Psychiatric Services, and the reference is included here. And at the end of the slide deck is the full reference as well, so that you can get more information about that. So next, I want to talk about these qualitative interviews that we just wrapped up with 26 women veterans who contacted the VCL within the year prior to us contacting them to schedule an interview. This sample was limited to veterans who use VA healthcare services because that's how we did our recruitment. So we mailed letters to women veterans who had a past year encounter with the VA healthcare system. This was nationally. And we sent letters, and then we followed up with phone calls to introduce the study and let people self-identify if they had used the VCL in the prior 12 months and if they wanted to participate in a telephone interview. So some folks may have contacted the VCL anonymously and it wasn't documented in their VA medical record. And so that's why we specifically did not limit our selection to only people who had a VCL contact that was also documented in their medical record, because we wanted to allow people to self-identify even if they hadn't identified themselves on the VCL call. So this is the breakdown of the regions where the veteran participants live, race and ethnicity and age. We wanted to get a mix of demographic characteristics in our study sample. And we asked about their experiences using VCL and their recommendations for strengthening VCL services specifically for women veterans. So we had a number of themes come up in the analyses of these very rich interviews. What I'm going to share with you today is some of our early analysis specifically focusing on the recommendations piece. I'm going to show you quotes that illustrate all these points, so I'll just briefly first go over all of the points. The first piece was about responder gender. This came up as the most salient point in almost every single one of our 26 interviews. The interview participant, the woman veteran who was participating in the interview, spontaneously raised the issue of responder gender. What I mean by that is that was not based on interviewer prompting about what do you think about the gender of the VCL responder. In almost every case, people spontaneously raised the issue of responder gender with a strong desire to at least have the option for women veterans to be able to speak with a woman VCL responder. People talked about potentially being inhibited in terms of sharing with a male VCL responder, that they would feel more comfortable sharing and sharing more with a woman VCL responder. And again, I'll give you some more examples of this. People also talked about maybe being activated or triggered by speaking with a man responder due to the very prominent and salient issue of having a history of gender-based violence and that really contributing to a lot of people's reasons for calling, or at least having that experience in their history. People also talked about options and opportunities for enhanced marketing of the Veterans Crisis Line, specifically to women veterans, and the importance of letting women veterans know what to expect. What's the reason for the crisis line? Do I have to be actively suicidal? What will happen when I call? And sort of the benefit of having more information about that. Some people talked about wanting more help with navigating resources or referrals following the VCL call, so knowing what to expect, what those services offer, and sometimes some support with navigating making those connections. People also talked about options regarding follow-up contact from the VCL. There are programs now to support outreach back to VCL callers who provide their contact information. And there, I'll show you some sort of mixed feedback from different participants about how that follow-up felt to them. People talked about the importance of therapeutic skills of the VCL responders, and specifically competence regarding gender-based violence and responding to concerns around gender-based violence. And also really importantly, when we asked about recommendations, a lot of what we heard it was, you know, keep doing what you're doing. This is a really important service. It, for large part, it functions really well. It's really important that we keep this resource available to women veterans. The response time was quick. I didn't have to wait a long time. The length of the call, often just right. I didn't feel rushed. People talked about the critical importance of having that space to just be able to talk to someone, that human connection being really important. The options of text or chat or voice. Some people really felt that they only wanted to have the voice option. They wanted to be able to hear someone else's voice, that they felt like it was a quicker response time having that voice conversation. Other people talked about needing to have that text option because sometimes they were in a place or a space where they weren't able to talk with their voice, or maybe they were emotionally distraught and crying, and it was easier to type or text than to talk in those moments. And the importance of maintaining the option of being anonymous, that sometimes it's a barrier for people if they can't be anonymous in a certain context, that that would really actually prevent them from using the service. And having that just someone to talk to at any point when your mental health provider or your friends, or your family are unavailable, when it's the middle of the night, that being a really critical resource to maintain. I'm going to share with you some excerpts from the interview transcripts that I think largely really speak for themselves and are just so powerful to understand what is fueling these themes and ideas that we identified. I have two slides about responder gender, and they're really packed with too much text on them. And this is after cutting so much of this text. These are each from different participants. I had so many more that aren't even included here. And I say that to again reemphasize how completely salient this topic was for the women that we interviewed. One woman said, "I got hurt in the military by men, and I don't want to talk to a man about my feelings." Another said, "I think that if a woman calls in, she needs another woman to talk to, not a guy, not a man, because men just react to things differently, and I don't think they would ever understand my fear." I'm an MST survivor, that is military sexual trauma. So personally, if I were to call the VA or the Veterans Crisis Line, I was always afraid I was going to get a male. My crises are usually male-centered or because of male issues, so it's hard for me to access if I don't have an option to talk to a female. I think when I'm in that type of crisis, I actually need a woman to talk to me, not a man. I've just had some really, really bad experiences with men, and so it's, I can't open up to them. I can't trust them. A lot of times women, if it's a man, we just don't want to reveal so much. We're not willing to open up. I don't care personally, but I know that a lot of women would be more willing to talk to a female as opposed to a man. And in this second slide, here's more about the specific recommendations to provide the options based on those kind of background comments about not feeling as comfortable talking to a man responder. One participant said, "If it was like a way when we called in that, like before we even have to hear of a voice of a male, like if it was a prompt that says, you know, if you prefer just a woman, you know, like press such and such, like that would be awesome because I literally hung up on the guy. It was kind of like a trigger." So this participant said she called in the Veterans Crisis Line. She heard what she perceived to be a man's voice, and it was emotionally triggering for her, and she hung up the phone. She couldn't continue on with the call. Others told us that they hang up and call back until they get a woman's voice. Someone else said, "I think one of the reasons that we may be hesitant, and it has been my case too, you know, is females not being comfortable speaking to males about certain things. Like I said, have a separate line for just strictly women, because that may, it may encourage more women to call knowing that there's another woman that they could speak to." Third woman said, "I think most females want a female to talk to. I think they just feel safer with somebody with just natural instincts. But if it were to be an option, you never know. There might be a female that just needs to talk to a guy, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes a guy's advice is way different than a female's perspective." And finally, "If they have an option between a male and a female, I think that more females would call because they'd be speaking to somebody they're comfortable with." So for a variety of reasons, and most commonly people talked about experiences of gender-based violence from a man, but people also talked about, having concerns around gynecological issues that they just felt better talking to someone who they understood to be a woman, for example. People really talked about the importance of this, wanting this option to be able to choose to talk to a woman, knowing that they could have that option. Regarding the follow-up mailing, so people talked about getting mailings, getting postcards or letters from the VCL specifically following their VCL contact. One person said, "I love the letters that they send a couple of weeks later because it's another reminder that somebody cares, and I save them and I put them in a box. And if I'm sad, I read them again. They'll pop in the mailbox every once in a while. I'm very grateful for that." In our analysis of this, our team thinks about this as like love letters, that this participant is just really feeling like these are gestures of love and care and support, which is the idea behind that program. But then another participant said, after I did the call, then I kept getting this, I still do get it in the mail, the little postcards with the numbers for that, for the crisis. I throw them. Actually, they annoy me that I still get them, to be honest with you. I don't want to keep getting these and getting these reminders of those nights that I had those issues. So this speaks again to sort of having an option around the, in this case, the follow-up mailings for the VCL. For some, it feels like love and care and support. For others, it may feel like a trigger, a reminder that people don't actually want. People also said a lot about suggestions around VCL marketing, specifically for women veterans. One person said, maybe if they just gave you a card to keep in your wallet, then you don't have to kind of look it up. And these are things, by the way, that in some cases we already have and we already do, but we're reflecting here what people are telling us because that indicates that for this person, she didn't have a card with the crisis line number and felt like that would be helpful and important. Other people said, women veterans might not be calling, probably just simply they're not aware that it exists and also not being able to have that number on hand. So she talked about increased advertising on the radio, on television, specifically late at night when a lot of women veterans in particular are having trouble sleeping and having some of those emotional crises, that might be a good time to do those. And a third example here of someone who says, people don't know about the crisis line. So feeling like there should be more of that marketing and advertising. But again, also letting people know, here's what this service is for. Here's what will happen when you call. One person, this is a quote from one person, but certainly not the only person who talked about this. She said, especially when there's someone in crisis, their last thing is to follow through with stuff. They need somebody to kind of guide them through the process or kind of have essentially hold their hand in the process, a follow-up somebody to come back and say, hey, you talked to us this day. What's going on? Did you get somebody? Do I need to contact somebody for you? Something like that would have been great. Something where they can trigger a follow-up with even a local clinic or a local VA of having someone reach out to this person. Obviously, if they're okay with it, meaning if the veteran is okay with having that follow-up. So that's a function that the suicide prevention coordinator might be doing, especially for those veterans who are calling with suicidal ideation or distress and agree to that follow-up. But we know people are also calling the VCL for a lot of other reasons and maybe receiving referrals for other kinds of services, for housing or food insecurity or something else. And we've heard from other studies too, people sort of saying, especially if I'm in crisis, if I'm in distress, if my life feels chaotic, it can be hard to do that follow-up without some support, some navigation, somebody offering to do that hand-holding for me. And then another salient theme that came up is around this competency around addressing gender-based violence. So this participant said definitely a little bit more education on how to deal with some of the women's issues, such as sexual harassment, sexual assaults, things like that. And she talks about, experiencing sexual assault on a day-to-day basis, as well as other stressors, caring for young children and things of that nature, sort of wanting to see demonstration of more competence among the VCL responders in addressing those issues that feel particularly common among women veterans. And finally, this recommendation to keep doing what you're doing. This person said, I just feel that it's important that they keep that is the VCL for the veterans and for everybody. Suicide is at an all-time high, and I think it's important that veterans have that resource when they can't, that they can reach out, because sometimes during this pandemic, it's been hectic to try to get into the VA. And I think that the VCL is the best program to help us during this time, because they're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I find that it's useful and it works. It has worked for me every time I've called them. They've gotten through my hard time, my bad moments, my anxiety, my panic attacks, whatever I'm dealing with. They come through and they won't hang up until they're sure that you are in a better state of mind. And we thought this was a good kind of representative quote of several people talking about the benefit and the positive impact that the VCL program has for them. Oops. So I wanted to just go over some key points and then a few implications. So we see that both men and women veterans contact VCL for a variety of needs and concerns. And when we look at those reasons for call, we see that really wide variation. The majority of calls are related to mental health and mental distress, but there's also a whole host of issues that are coming up. And only about 20% of the calls by women and about 17% of the calls by men were specifically tagged as suicide related. But we know that all of these other issues that come up on the calls, whether it's abuse and violence or housing or finances or physical health, those can also lead to suicidal ideation down the road if they're not addressed. So addressing those at the time of the VCL call can also be an upstream suicide prevention intervention. We see several similarities in terms of call trends, call volume, and timing by gender, but we also see salient differences in the reasons for call and the specific suicide screening responses by gender. With the trends that we looked at related to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, where we really didn't see what we might have thought would be an expected large jump in use of the Veterans Crisis Line. My hypothesis here is that the COVID-19 pandemic probably prompted an increase in calls from some veterans, maybe some veterans who were already using the VCL and increased their use of VCL. Maybe some people who had never called VCL before and had new onset distress and reached out during that time. There's also increased marketing of VCL during that time. But maybe we didn't see a large jump because maybe there was a decrease in calls by others. Maybe some people didn't have the privacy to reach out to VCL, or maybe had less need, maybe because they actually had a reduction in certain stresses around loneliness or employment or things like that. We see that, again, women veterans note VCL is a critical resource, and we also see some unique needs related to unique experiences as women veterans. We see that in the qualitative interviews. We see that in the differences in trends around reason for call, and even the call volume trends by month. There may be some variation there, and really the salience, again, of sexual and gender-based violence coming up over and over again, specifically for women veterans. So we think that it's really critical, based on these findings, for VCL responders and other providers of services to women veterans to be aware of gender-specific needs and experiences of women veterans, and competent to respond and address those concerns, especially related to interpersonal and gender-based violence. The findings so far suggest that VCL may want to consider some adjustments to programming to provide more options around things like responder gender or whether or not people receive follow-up outreach mailings. And we see encouragement for continued marketing of the VCL services, including education about expectations for VCL contact, what might happen when you call the VCL or what your options would be. And then quickly, I'll share with you what our planned next steps are, and then I want to open up for addressing any comments or questions that folks may have, because there's a lot more that I didn't include in the presentation, but I can also talk about related to this project. So I mentioned our AIM-2 analysis that's currently getting finished up, and we'll soon be disseminating the findings there, where we're looking at the relationship of VCL call characteristics to suicidal self-directed violence. So that is suicide attempts and death by suicide in the 12 months following the VCL calls. We're going to be looking at that both from 2018 to 2019, so that's prior to the onset of COVID-19, and then again for 20 calls in 2020, and outcomes in 2020 and 2021, that is during the COVID-19 pandemic. We also are going to be expanding our AIM-3 that was originally designed to do interviews with women veterans who've contacted VCL, and we've recently received approval, so we will be starting to also do interviews with men who've contacted VCL, because some of our themes may also come up with men callers as well, and we can't really speak to gender difference if we don't have that comparison. And we'll be doing continued dissemination of these research findings, including with input from our operations partners and other stakeholders, including veteran stakeholders who participate in our study advisory board. I have included in this slide deck the references that were used in the slides, and these three bolded references are the manuscripts specifically from this study. So I'm going to stop there. My email is here, so people are welcome to reach out to me following this call, but I also want to open it up to any questions or comments from the group. I think folks can type in the Q&A box, and I can see those and respond to those. Yep.
Yep, we do have a few questions out here. Let me know if you'd like me to read those on the call.
Yeah, please. I actually don't see those. So, or wait. Oh no, you know what? I do. I can take care of that.
Okay.
So let's see. Oops, these are kind of coming in and scrolling up. Will the new 988 changeover result in new VCL branded outreach materials? Yes, absolutely. That won't come from me, but that will certainly come from VCL. I know they'll be doing a big push. So stay tuned. That's absolutely coming through. Mixed methodology. So yes, that we used multiple methods in this study, quantitative analysis and qualitative data. It's not necessarily a true mixed methods design because we can't link our qualitative interviews to the quantitative data per se, but we certainly did use multiple methodologies for this study. And I appreciate folks chiming in. I know that the operations partners, VCL and Health Services Research and Development for VA, we're in close contact about this study, and this study really is used along with other studies to provide that kind of continuous quality improvement and feedback to the VCL program. So a great question about repeated calls by a single caller, and if we were able to analyze that. It is true that people can and do call the VCL frequently. People can call multiple times. And so our VCL call data, we may include multiple calls by the same caller. In our first analysis in AIM-1, when we were looking at just analysis of the VCL call data, we wanted to include all calls by that were identified as by veterans and with gender identified. And we didn't want to limit to those where the individual identity of the caller was identified. So because some calls can come in as anonymous, we're not able to identify if there's multiple calls by the same caller because some of those calls are anonymous. So we don't know who they belong to. In our AIM-2 analysis, where we're linking the call information to the outcomes data, those are limited to calls that are identified and linked to VHA medical records. And so there we did, the unit of analysis was caller versus call. But again, we can't identify how many calls per person, because there may be somebody who gives their identifying information at one call and at another call chooses not to. So we really don't know how many calls per person. We know from our qualitative interviews, people talking, we ask people about, you know, how often do you call? And people talk about, some folks have said they've called once and some say they've called multiple times, sometimes calls multiple times even within a single day. We have continuous communications with folks from VCL and other stakeholders. We provide regular briefings to VCL and Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention, as well as Women Veterans Programs and other relevant programs in the VA, including the IPV Assistance Program. So that allows our operations partners to incorporate some of what we're learning from this study along the way. But when we complete the study, we'll do a more formal set of recommendations. So in terms of passive suicidal ideation, we can't say specifically from this study if women veterans are more likely than men veterans to have passive suicidal ideation in general, or if it is something specific to intimate partner violence. I know it is something that comes up frequently related to intimate partner violence, and that women veterans are more likely than men veterans to experience intimate partner violence. But I think this is also why we're wanting to do, and we will be doing, qualitative interviews with men veterans, because there's a whole bunch of other information in our qualitative interviews that hasn't yet been fully analyzed, and it's not quite ready for dissemination. But we asked people about, you know, what did you have any concerns or hesitance around contacting VCL, and what was that about? And so we're seeing some interesting information come up there, but again, we don't know if that's gender specific yet until we also interview men veterans. And as we're talking about these gender differences also, I want to note that we're talking about this in terms of a gender binary, but recognizing that certainly not everyone and certainly not every veteran identifies as either man or woman or in that gender binary. So the proportion of women veteran VCL callers who are enrolled in VA healthcare versus not, excluding those who remained anonymous. It's hard to get that exact percentage because we really have the identifying information for the people who have the VCL health records, because some of that information is populated by their health record. But we do have indicators if people are, if they disclose if they're using VA health services or not. And so when we disseminate our AIM-2 findings, we'll be able to show what proportion of the calls we're able to link with a VA health record. I don't have that off the top of my head, but again, it's not a perfect statistic of what proportion of VCL callers have a VHA record, but we'll be able to tell you of the calls in this year what portion do have an associated health record of the ones that are not anonymous. Any changes in response to We are not planning to do ongoing analysis at this point of changes in the content of VCL calls, but I think it's certainly a possibility. I'd be happy to talk with or consult with other researchers who may be interested in doing some analysis. VCL also does their own analysis of call trends and what people are calling about, and reports on some variation in call volume over time, that we know there are spikes associated with different events. For example, we presented those trends in call volume change in 2020, expecting that there may be an impact from COVID-19, but there could have been also impacts from other events occurring in 2020 as well, as well as changes in VCL marketing. Bit of background. So it's a good question about call responders. And I am, I can't completely speak for VCL or how responders are identified and trained, but I can tell you generally that VCL responders are specifically identified and trained, and there's ongoing monitor and training and feedback. And VCL is really interested in this kind of work to partner with researchers to get feedback on the program and any information that can be useful for tweaking or strengthening the program in particular. Kim Mullen wrote in 6 weeks of training. So thank you, Kim. And I know, there's also, of course, ongoing training and education opportunities as well. But, 6 full weeks of training is fairly robust and certainly more than what we see on a lot of kind of community-based civilian crisis lines where people may receive something like a total of 40 hours or less for volunteer call responses. The stakeholder advisory board includes our operations partners from VCL and Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention, from the VA IPV Assistance Program, from other VA offices. We also have other subject matter experts and researchers, both from VA and outside of VA. And we also have women veterans who are not employed by VA and have lived experience expertise, but not as part of their job functions, who participate in our stakeholder advisory board as well. I'm realizing that we have 2 minutes left, and I'm still sort of monitoring the Q&A, but again, I welcome anyone to reach out to me by email. I have here my VA email address as well as my university email address. This study is ongoing. We're in year two of a 3-year study, and we'll be continuing to consult with our advisory board and other stakeholders and continuing to conduct our ongoing analyses and disseminate our materials. This study really is designed with the goal, as is in the title, to strengthen suicide prevention specifically for women veterans through the Veterans Crisis Line, which we know is a really important service. And a lot of what we're finding here validates what we've experienced and what we've seen anecdotally, but really hasn't been shown systematically in the research. Thank you all for joining, and please reach out with any other questions or comments that you may have.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Dichter. I really want to thank you for your time putting together this session and presenting today. We really do appreciate it. For the audience, I'm going to close the meeting out in just a moment here, and when I do, you will be prompted with a feedback form. We really would appreciate if you took a few moments to fill that out. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar, and we look forward to seeing you at a future session. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.